KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Coming up next at 9:30, Fight the Empire host Pear talks to journalist and author Daniel Lazar about Russia's motivations in interfering in American politics. At 10 on The Heather McCoy Show, Heather talks to Prost America writer Gwen DeVries about the next Thorns game in the upcoming Women's World Cup. She also talks to Jason Scott of LGBT Fresno to talk about what life is like for LGBT people who live in more conservative areas of our country. At 11, Between the Covers features an interview with Sofia Shalmayev about her new memoir, Mother Winter. And 11:30, it's Black Book Talk with your hostess, Patricia Welch, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
Well, good morning. This is Pear Fogering again. I've got my Fight the Empire helmet on, and our guest is writer Daniel Lazar, the author of The Frozen Republic and other books, and he's a writer for The Nation and Consortium News, Harper, and Le Monde Diplomatique. And he has an article we're going to talk about. Actually, the promo has sort of got the wrong article. This one is Russiagate's Monstrous Offspring. And so, Daniel Lazar, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me.
Well, okay, what is this? Who or what is this offspring?
Well, I think that essentially Russiagate is a monstrous conspiracy to make fools of Democrats and reelect Trump. That's basically my thesis.
Okay. Who is doing this conspiracy?
I'm afraid it's the Democrats themselves. They're shooting themselves in the foot or other body parts. But the whole Russiagate theory is nonsense. It's a concoction of the intelligence agencies and the press. And it's backfiring on the Democrats badly. And let me just emphasize, I am the most anti-conspiratorialist person that you've ever met. I don't believe in conspiracies, but I believe in the simplest explanations possible, but even the most determined anti-conspiratorialist must recognize that there are conspiracies or that people do get together and do stupid stuff, And that's what they're doing with Russiagate.
Well, can I interject here? This has been one of my little crotchets now for a while, is that people talk about conspiracy theories, and they're sort of conditioned to roll their eyes. And when you look at it, there's nothing mysterious about a conspiracy. It's just, you know, two or more people getting together to do something wrong. And you know, if you want to go down to a courthouse, you'll find all sorts of conspiracy theories. The country's district attorneys are great conspiracy theorists. And so it's the question is not the theory. The question to me is there are some theories that make sense, and there are others that are pretty outlandish. You know, I don't do lizards from outer space, but I think I would talk about the CIA. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there are conspiracies. Some conspiracy theories are pretty off the wall, but sometimes they make sense. But actually, Russiagate, the idea that the Russians, you know, somehow steered the election to Trump, somehow may have colluded with Trump, is one of those off the wall conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't hang together. The evidence is not there, and yet that's all we've heard from the press for really close to 3 years. And the Mueller report, rather than stopping it, seems to have sort of just pitched it into a higher gear. So what's amazing is that conspiratorial thinking has now invaded the mainstream, the liberals, the Democrats, most of the corporate media, et cetera.
Well, it's interesting that the you know, the Mueller report, it ignores, you know, William Binney came out with an explanation. He says that the DNC material was leaked and not hacked, and his evidence is the time it took to transfer this material. So here's a guy, William Binney, has been with the NSA for 30 years as their technical director. Here's a guy who knows his stuff, and he comes out with a coherent explanation for what's going on, but he's been ignored. It's not, he hasn't been refuted or argued against or anything. He's been ignored. To me, that's really kind of dishonest.
Well, it's really stupid. I mean, the Mueller report is a great big document. It's 448 pages.
Mm-hmm.
There are some good parts, some not so good parts. The good parts deal with collusion, and that section of the report is really pretty devastating. I mean, it just knocks out of the park all kinds of stories that have been beaten to death by the press since mid-2016, and it really shows. It shows how each one is untrue. But you're absolutely correct. The report, however, then takes as a starting point the intelligence community's assessment that the Russians engaged in massive systematic interference in the 2016 election. It assumes that. It doesn't try to prove that. And that's a basic logical error.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what the report does. I mean, look at it. Americans are beginning to realize that that Mueller is not a terribly smart guy. That comes from that they're getting that impression from the way he handled the whole obstruction issue. I mean, his explanations don't really make sense. And Americans are beginning to realize this is a guy who just isn't the sharpest tool in the shed. And so with regard to the question of Russian interference, rather than sort of wiping the slate clean and saying, look, what's the story here? What do we have here? What's the evidence pro or con? Let's attack this problem from scratch. He says no. It says his starting point is what the intelligence agencies already came up with, even though they never made public any kind of evidence whatsoever. So therefore he's ignored all contrary theories put forth by people like Binney. He has William Binney. He has indicted. I mean, essentially, he's charged WikiLeaks with collaborating with Russia, even though Julian Assange, for one, says it's not true. He never made any effort to interview Julian Assange. He never entertained any contrary theories, and his own theory, his own chronology, explaining why, you know, why and how the Russians passed the information onto WikiLeaks doesn't make sense. So
go ahead.
So the report is really uneven. I'd give it a C minus if I was Mueller's professor.
Do you think that this has anything to do with the right now Julian Assange is being held in some high security prison, and his supporters saying he's being sort of tortured and denied medical care, he's being treated miserably, and is this possibly an attempt to break him, to break his will, to make him testify to things that are not true?
Well, I think that the Mueller report is another is aimed at shoring up the Washington consensus that Russia is our great enemy, that Russia interfered in the 2016 election, and that that WikiLeaks was its willing collaborator. I remember you have the official position of the Trump administration is that WikiLeaks is a hostile intelligence agency, a hostile intelligence force. Joe Biden, you know, called for treating Assange as a terrorist. So, you know, so the consensus in Washington is fiercely hostile to WikiLeaks. And rather than questioning this, rather than asking questions and reexamining the problem anew, Mueller has added his enormous prestige to that anti-WikiLeaks consensus.
Well, I guess if you take out the the so-called hacking, what's left as far as so-called interference are these Facebook posts, social media things. And the so-called troll farm in St. Petersburg. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, you know, there's a company in St. Petersburg, formerly Leningrad, called the Internet Research Agency, and they took out a bunch of ads in Facebook, most of which had nothing to do with the election, and they spent a grand total of $44,000. In roughly a 24-month period preceding the election,
mm-hmm.
That may be a lot of money to you or me, but it's not very much money in the scheme of things. And the Clinton and Trump campaigns, for example, spent $81 million on Facebook ads over the same period. So these ads, the Facebook calculates that these ads may have reached 126 million people. But all that means is 126 million people may have seen one of these ads in the flood of information they get over WikiLeaks. Now, they may have seen one of these ads. Odds are these ads were not even pertinent to the election. And in any case, even the ads that were pertinent to the election were so flaky, you know, so amateurish. A picture of a muscle-bound Bernie Sanders,
all right.
or Jesus and Satan arm wrestling, and the caption says, "If Satan wins, then Hillary wins." I mean, who's going to be persuaded by that? So it really is a tempest in a teacup, the presence on Twitter was equally every bit as much a drop in the bucket as these other things. Now, I'm not saying that they're right to interfere. All I'm saying is that this is exceedingly minor stuff compared, for example, to what the U.S. routinely does to other countries, Russia included. And let me add also that there is no evidence that the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, is connected with the Kremlin. I mean, everyone in America assumes that a single sparrow can't fall to the ground without Vladimir Putin knowing about it. But that's not true. And the only evidence that the report provides of a Kremlin leak is a single New York Times article. dating from 2018. That's just laughable.
Hmm.
I mean, it's just laughable. So we have this one flaky company, which is probably some kind of doing some kind of marketing on social media, and maybe, maybe throwing in a few anti-Hillary ads and pro-Bernie Sanders ads, or maybe some pro-Trump ads too. And we have some minor presence on Twitter. And then we have the GRU, the Russian intelligence, military intelligence, allegedly fishing around in the DNC computers, which they should not have done, but we're presented with no persuasive evidence that whatever materials they came up with was the massive email link that WikiLeaks made public on July 22nd, 2016. So the whole thing doesn't add up to a hill of beans, and yet the Mueller report joins the rest of the Washington establishment in raising the alarm, sounding the alarm over some exceedingly minor stuff.
Well, it must serve some purpose for them.
Yeah, it serves the purpose of drumming up war fever with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, we have two xenophobic parties in Washington. One is drumming up hatred of Russia, and the other is drumming up hatred of Mexico, Venezuela, Iran, and China.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a question of poison A versus poison B. Take your choice.
It's sort of like two kinds of people say that that Donald Trump is crazy. Well, I think he might be. But there's different. Any clinical psychologist will tell you there's lots of forms of insanity, and I think Bolton fits that. I think Bolton has got a. I think he's very obsessive, and he's got a real kind of pathological grudge against any country that stands in our way.
Well, things are so bad that we now have to rely on the maturity of Donald Trump to protect us against Mike Pompeo and Bolton. It's insane. And the Democrats are really, my contempt for them is just boundless. And my contempt for Hillary Clinton is really boundless.
Well, it's been said that, the Democrats are using this as an excuse why Hillary's not in the White House. She did get more votes than Donald Trump, which says something about our system right there. But it's a way of getting the Democrats off the hook, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a way of getting the Democrats off the hook. It's a way of getting the Constitution off the hook. The Electoral College is a relic of the 18th century, and it should have been fixed ages ago.
Well, Oregon just took a step the other day. We voted to join a bunch of other states that in the future our delegates, our electoral delegates, will vote. I guess they will follow the popular vote. And
right,
if enough states will do that, the Electoral College, in effect, has been kind of superseded.
Yes, I'm very skeptical as to whether that will happen, though.
I think they got up to 190, they need 270 electoral votes to reach this threshold, and they're about, 190 or something like that.
But they've got no Republican states,
mm-hmm.
and I doubt they ever will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Republicans are determined to utilize their constitutional advantages to the utmost, and so they will fight to stop the Democrats from changing that. I mean, look at the America has a huge problem. It's a problem that no one wants to talk about, and in fact, very few people even recognize. It has this 18th century constitution, which we've all been raised to worship, but which is phenomenally out of date, a woefully inefficient and undemocratic form plan of government, and three, even worse, is essentially unchangeable. So America is kind of locked into this framework, and it's kind of locked itself into the framework and thrown away the key. And no one knows how to get out of it.
Well, you know, we've got, it has to be said that that our system put Donald Trump in the White House. And there's no way around that. But at the same time, the United States likes to tell the world, we try to sell our system of democracy to other countries in the world. And it's kind of hard to do that when you see who it installed in the White House.
Well, it's not only Trump, though. I mean, American politics are breaking down rapidly. I mean, it's not only Trump; it's also the growth of a financially self-aggrandizing top 1% or top 0.1%. It's a frozen two-party system, which dates from 1856, which everybody despises, but which nobody can change. It's a Senate, which is the most unrepresentative major legislative body in the world, in the putative democratic world. I mean, bear in mind that a majority of Americans live in just 10 states, and therefore they are outvoted 5-1 by the minority. That's an outrage. People should be talking about it, but they're not. You have an electoral college, which is an outrage. You have racist voting laws. I mean, stop me. I could go on and on for hours. And yet, what's truly horrifying is that it's all effectively unchangeable.
Hmm. Well, where do you think this is leading us? It seems to be heading in a very bad direction.
America, I have no doubt, I have not the slightest doubt, that America is heading into a revolutionary situation. Not the slightest. And believe me, I've said that before. Decades ago, and people would roll their eyes and say, "Oh, there goes Dan, good old Dan." But now they don't roll their eyes anymore because everyone knows that things are out of control.
Mm-hmm.
The country is breaking down rapidly. The Democrats, as things stand now, the Democrats may well lose in 2020, mm-hmm. which means there'll be four more years of Trump. And this country will emerge from that just unrecognizable.
Well, you know, when you have a two-party system, it's sort of interesting. You go to the store and there's 25 brands of toothpaste on the shelves. You know, when you talk about sexuality and gender, I mean, we've got way beyond the binary framework, but still we have this binary political system, which means that, you automatically get steered into a lesser of the evils. And Trump is such a horrible evil that I think a lot of people are spooked by him, including people here at KBOO, that they'll support the intelligence so-called community just because they are not Trump, you know?
Well, you know, but yeah, I agree. I'm aware that's what people are thinking, but I must emphasize that Trump is really terrible, but the Democrats are really terrible too. I mean, the rampage, the way U.S. foreign policy collapsed after 2011 is really still pretty awe-inspiring. I mean, it was basically because Obama gave Hillary Clinton her lead, but she destroyed, depending on how you count them, two or three countries. She created she sort of sparked a wave of terrorism that spooked much of the world, and she also had a direct hand in creating the worst migrant crisis since World War II, and one which completely turned European politics upside down.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty impressive record, I'd say.
Well, people kind of, I think one of the big turning points was the, in Ukraine, where, you may think that Yanukovych was a crook. He probably was, but he was elected, and he was overthrown by his kind of a coup. And the some of these people in the streets, I've seen the videos, they're not much different from the torchbearers there in Charlottesville, Virginia. I mean, neo-fascists overthrew an elected government in Ukraine, with Victoria Nuland, working for Hillary Clinton, was out there passing out cookies or something.
Yes, 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 absolutely. I mean, it was there's no doubt that the protests and the Euromaidan protests in Kiev were led by ultra-rightists, neo-Nazis, neo-Nazi nationalists. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt the U.S. government looked away. There's no doubt that that journalists were discouraged from telling the truth, and most went along. There's just the record is quite clear, quite clear. So everyone excoriates Trump for saying there are good people on both sides in Charlottesville, but essentially the Democrats did the same thing in Kiev, where they turned a blind eye to a major neo-Nazi presence.
And that mindset is still going. We still wonder why Putin is supposedly interfering in our politics in a very kind of very minor way.
Well, yeah, and you know, in Syria, the press has turned a blind eye to the simple fact that al-Qaeda dominates the rebel opposition. I mean, the same people who 4 or 5 miles from where I'm sitting right now, you know, killed 3,000 people. Mm-hmm. are now fighting to overthrow Bashar al-Assad with U.S. and Saudi weapons. I mean, why aren't Americans rioting in the streets over that? I mean, the Bush doctrine in the wake of 2001 was like, you know, it was like no dealings with terrorists. If you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist. Yet here is the U.S. partnering was the same terrorist who caused a bloody massacre in Lower Manhattan.
Well, you know, we've only got a couple minutes left, but the al-Qaeda was sort of, to my mind at least, was set in motion in Afghanistan by none other than Zbigniew Brzezinski, which he was very proud of doing. You know, he thought that he liberated Poland and destroyed Afghanistan, but... And we are still feeling the effects of that.
Yes, 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 yes. I mean, wherever U.S. intervention goes in the Middle East, al-Qaeda seems to follow. Whether it's Libya or Syria or Yemen or Afghanistan, it's amazing. It's a partnership that just keeps on going. It's incredible.
But still, the people in charge of this seem to have this reputation for being competent. You know, I mean, people say that, well, Hillary may not be very likable, but she's a competent person. And I disagree with that myself.
Well, Hillary is so incompetent, she made Trump look competent. I mean, Trump scored some good points in the campaign trail against her. And it was only because of Hillary's own blindness and stupidity that he was able to do that. I mean, Clinton is a scary person. The Clintons have backed every war since Nicaragua. She is as militaristic as they come, and her solution to all problems is regime change and war.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't want to, she doesn't want to hear anything else about it. So therefore, I mean, I'm not trying to say anything in favor of Trump, but I just want people to realize that Trump didn't get where he is on his own. The Democrats enabled him to through their own lousy campaigning, but their own foreign policy incompetence.
Wow. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking with Daniel Lazar in his latest article in Consortium News, is Russiagate's Monstrous Offspring. It's a really very eye-opening article. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Stay tuned for the, I believe, the Heather McCoy Show is coming up.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of I'm Afraid of Americans, a book release party on Saturday, June 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Books Around the Corner in Gresham. The stories of I'm Afraid of Americans are set in a high school in Los Angeles County in the 1980s. They show students, teachers, and support staff busy with daily details, but also living in the history, geography, and dislocations of their time. Author M.F. McAuliffe will read from the collection of stories and sign books. Again, that's I'm Afraid of Americans, a book release party on Saturday, June 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Books Around the Corner, 40 Northwest 2nd Street in Gresham. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 10 o'clock. Coming up next on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather talks to Prost America writer Gwen DeVries about the next Thorns game and the upcoming Women's World Cup. She also talks to Jason Scott of LGBT Fresno to talk about what life is like for LGBT people who live in more conservative areas of the country. At 11, Between the Covers features an interview with Sophia Shelmayev about her new memoir, Mother Winter. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk with your hosts Patricia Welsh, Obie Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.